Mr. Huberman, the floor is yours, and do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, please. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, 3 minutes.
And I will speak slowly, so if the court has any questions, I'll be sure to respond. My name is David Huberman on behalf of the Commonwealth. This case presents two different questions, which are very similar and essentially boil down to the point of would a reasonable person in Mr. Yen's position have felt free to leave. But I will address the assignments of error as they appear on brief, because that, of course, will be the way that the court presents them in its opinion. With respect to the first assignment of error, after an initial traffic detention has concluded, a new consensual police encounter can occur. And during that encounter, the police did not have to advise a previously lawfully seized individual that he is, quote, free to go, unquote, before his consent to search will be considered voluntary. And
Mr. Zuberman, this is Judge Alston. Just a quick question. From what I understand from your opponent colleague, he agrees with you that there is no requirement that the police inform an individual that he is indeed free to leave. So I don't really think that that's an issue we need to resolve. But the greater question that I have is that, and obviously different minds could disagree, is that apparently Judge Tran, when he considered the evidence here, reached a conclusion that based upon his analysis of all that was going on, that he didn't believe that a person in this position actually thought that he was free to leave. And that seems to be a factual determination that was made by Judge Tran. And with our standard of review, how are you able to overcome that?
Yes, sir, Judge Alston. I think there are several answers to your question and certainly agreed with respect to the standard of review. The first response is that obviously this court only will reverse a lower court's decision on a motion to suppress for clear error. In this case, at least with respect to some of the judge's findings, for example, the presence of multiple backup officers, the record does not bear out that there were multiple backup officers. There was one additional backup officer. That may be a slight point, but nevertheless, it indicates that there's at least a portion of the judge's ruling that's inconsistent. First, the court also noted in its opinion that Yen was, quote, still engaged in conversation with the officer, and that was part of the judge's rationale. It's the Commonwealth's position that that is irrelevant. The Fourth Amendment doesn't require that a police officer cease all interaction with a citizen before requesting consent to search after a traffic stop.
Mr. Huberman, this is Judge Russell.
Yes, sir.
I mean, is it fair, given your initial comment, I'm going to have the same question for your opponent. Doesn't this really come down to whether a reasonable person would have felt free to leave? If a reasonable person would have felt free to leave, it's a consent search because he's no longer seized. If a reasonable person wouldn't, it's an impermissible search. Is that the state of play ultimately?
I agree, Your Honor. I agree, Judge Russell. I think that's accurate.
And to the extent that that turns on whether he was seized or not, in Harris, the Virginia Supreme Court noted that whether a person has been seized in violation of the Fourth Amendment is not is a question that we review de novo and do not defer to the trial court's determination,
that's
with the exception
correct.
Of findings of historical fact. But here, as I understand it, and I'm going to ask your opponent this question as well, given that the matter was submitted on stipulations, the trial court really didn't make any historical findings of fact. It was applying those facts to the question of whether he was seized or not, the stipulated facts. Is that your understanding as well?
It is, Your Honor, and that was I was about to reach that portion also in response to Judge Alston's question as well. In this case, again, particularly because the court did rely upon stipulated facts and relied upon evidence that was set forth during a preliminary hearing, essentially what we are looking at is the court's application of that Fourth Amendment analysis to the totality of the circumstances, which is a de novo review. In this case, Officer Valentin did not ask for consent to search until after he had completed his investigation of both the traffic offense and the possible intoxication or driving while intoxicated offense. Officer Valentin had returned Mr. Yen's driver's license and his registration, and he had issued Mr. Yen a warning citation. Officer Valentin also advised Yen upon his completion of a field sobriety test that he did not believe he was intoxicated and that, quote, the evaluation for the DUI was over, unquote. I think under those circumstances, a reasonable person would have felt free to leave. And I do think on this point, Ohio versus Robinette is instructive because there, without belaboring the point too much, the police conducted a traffic stop based upon a traffic violation of speeding. The officer asked for the defendant's driver's license and ran a computer check, which indicated that that the defendant, Mr. Robinette, had no previous violations. The officer then asked the defendant to exit his vehicle, issued a verbal warning to him, and returned his driver's license. And essentially, there's a break, and then the officer says, quote, hey, one question before you get gone. Are you carrying any illegal contraband in your car, any weapons of any kind, drugs, anything like that? Robinette replied that he didn't have any contraband, but he permitted the officer to search the car, and that ultimately led to the discovery of illegal narcotics. Now, the Supreme Court of Ohio, in a divided vote, looked at that scenario and found very similar to, I think, Judge Tran in this case, and I hate to read it to the court, this is just one sentence, but the Ohio Supreme Court held that the right, quote, the right guaranteed by the federal and Ohio constitutions to be secure in one's person and property requires that citizens stopped for traffic offenses be clearly informed by the detaining officer when they are free to go after a valid detention before an officer attempts to engage in a consensual interrogation. That's very similar to the fact scenario that's presented in this case. And, of course, the United States Supreme Court disagreed with the Ohio Supreme Court and held, said that it eschewed bright line rules and expressly concluded that a lawfully seized defendant does not have to be advised that he is, quote, free to go, unquote, before his consent to search may be deemed voluntary. So I do think that really what this court is looking at when applying that totality of the circumstances approach to the facts of this case is excuse me, a de novo review.
Mr. Huberman, it strikes me that the undisputed facts here place this somewhere in between the continuum of the Virginia Supreme Court's decision in Dickerson and its decision in Harris.
I think so, Your Honor. I think that's exactly right.
All right. What's your best argument as to why this is more like Dickerson? And I'm going to ask your opponent why it's more like Harris, because I imagine that's going to be
it. Yes, Your Honor. Excuse me, I apologize for my voice getting over cold. In Harris versus Commonwealth, I think could be distinguishable because there, the officer testified that the defendant was free to go prior to the request to search, but he never advised the defendant that he was free to go. So, it doesn't matter what the trooper thinks in his mind at the time. Very importantly to this case, there, the trooper also did not inform the defendant that he was not going to be charged with a traffic offense. And I think that is the primary distinction here. And that second finding was critical to the Harris court's analysis. The court held that Harris knew he had committed a traffic violation, and he knew he had not complied with the officer's request to produce a driver's license. And Harris, as the court probably recalls, he provided a Social Security card because he didn't have a driver's license with him. And this court held, the Supreme Court of Virginia held that the officer did nothing to indicate to Harris that there was no longer that he was no longer subject to detention for a traffic violation. Now, obviously, that's on one end of the spectrum. Dickerson, I think, is far more like this case, and there the Supreme Court of Virginia held that the presence of two armed, uniformed police officers and a patrol vehicle with activated emergency lights was insufficient to support a reasonable belief that the defendant was not free to leave when the officer had advised the defendant that he could depart. Now, in light of those two cases, we also have Ouellette, which was cited on brief. It's an unpublished decision of this court, and I think it's also similar to the facts presented here in Olette, there was a post-traffic stop encounter that this court held was consensual because the officer had expressly informed the defendant that he was not going to issue a citation for the traffic infraction supporting the initial detention, despite the fact that the officer had, at that point, not even returned the driver's license to him. And there the court quoted several United States Supreme Court precedents and held that a consensual encounter does not become an unconstitutional seizure by the presence of several armed officers, by the failure to tell the person that he is free to go, or by the failure to explain to that defendant that he's free to disregard further questioning, or by the retention of the person's license. Now, here in this case, again, not to belabor the facts again, but Officer Valentin had advised Mr. Yen he had given him a warning citation for running the red light, and he had expressly told him at the conclusion of the field sobriety tests that he did not think that he was intoxicated and that the evaluation for DUI was over. Under those circumstances, a reasonable person would have felt that he was free to leave at the time. I'd also like to briefly address the U.S. Supreme Court's relatively recent decision in Rodriguez versus the United States, just to distinguish it. There, the main holding of the Rodriguez court was that an officer may conduct certain unrelated checks during an otherwise lawful traffic stop, but the officer can't do it in a way that prolongs the stop absent some form of reasonable suspicion. This case is immediately distinguishable, however, because Rodriguez did not consent. It was a dog sniff case that delayed Mr. Rodriguez by a nominal amount, but here in this case, Mr. Yen consented to the search, so it's simply not applicable to the facts of this case. Further, again, I just to stress the point that, again, the courts are going to look at the totality of the circumstances, and I think this court is well within its rights to conduct that analysis de novo and apply that in this case. Here, consent can only be invalidated upon a showing that a defendant's will was overborne or that his capacity for self-determination was critically impaired. And Mr. Gann cannot demonstrate that on these facts. And in this case, the trial court erred when it concluded that a reasonable person in Yen's position would not have felt free to leave because, again, he was still engaged in conversation with the officer, there were backup officers present, and that third, particularly in the absence of a clear directive from the officer that the defendant was free to leave, Mr. Yen would not have felt free to leave. And that's similar to the incorrect logic, or at least the reverse logic, of the Supreme Court of Ohio in Robinette. And relatedly, I think Yen's reliance on the case of Redinger versus Commonwealth was also misplaced there. The Supreme Court of Virginia concluded that despite an officer's statement that the defendant was free to leave, the totality of the circumstances demonstrated that he was actually seized. And here we have sort of a flip scenario. The officer says, the quote-unquote magic phrase of you're free to go, but by the officer's conduct and the totality of the circumstances, the defendant in that case was pulled over. It was late at night. It was on a rural road. There were two officers, and they badgered him and repeatedly asked him, I think, three times for search after telling him he was free to leave. So,
excuse me. I just want to let you know you're in your rebuttal time. You're, of course, free to use it. But
thank you, Chief Judge.
Yes, sir.
I will concede or yield the floor to my opponent and pick up a rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Dubler?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Zachary Dubler, and I represent the appellee, Mr. Kyle Emerson Yen. Now, taking the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Yen and granting him all reasonable inferences that can be derived from the record, this court should uphold the lower court's ruling in suppressing the evidence of Officer Valentin's search for two primary reasons. First, an officer, after seizing an individual for a traffic violation, and then prolonging that stop to investigate a separate and possible crime, i.e. the DUI, that officer must do something, i.e. not use the magic words, you're free to leave, but must do something to indicate to a reasonable citizen that, yes, you are free to leave and disregard any further requests or instructions that that officer might give. And two,
Mr. Dubler,
yes, sir.
I have a question. On brief, you say that given the way this was presented to the trial court on stipulated facts with the preliminary hearing transcript, that no facts are in dispute. Assuming that to be the case, the only issue, factual issue, I see is the reference in the circuit court's orders to backup officers. My review of the record is consistent with the Commonwealth that there was only one backup officer. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, Your Honor.
So that
is... It's probably a typo, or the court was just referring to the two officers. It was probably a typo, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The second point, Your Honor, and completely and totally distinct from the first assignment of error, is that under the totality of circumstances surrounding Mr. Yen's stop, no reasonable person in Mr. Yen's position would have felt free to disregard Officer Valentin's instruction to raise their shirt. And therefore, the finding of the contraband was not a result of a consensual encounter, but a result of an illegal seizure.
Mr. Dubler, do you agree with the Commonwealth agreement with my question that this really turns on if a reasonable person would have felt free to leave, it's a consent search. If a reasonable person would not have felt free to leave at the conclusion of the DUI and part of this, his stated consent and his actions indicating consent are invalid, and therefore the motion to suppress should have been granted. It really comes down to that question.
That is the essence of the question, Your Honor, yes, and I completely agree with the Commonwealth and Your Honor's statement of it. As to the first assignment of error, the lower court was correct in holding that Officer Valentin needed to more clearly indicate to Mr. Yen that he was free to leave, but as Judge Austin said, he need not use those magic words. In Rittiger versus the Commonwealth, I feel like I must go into the facts a little bit. The defendant was pulled over for a driving infraction. After being issued a ticket, the defendant told he was free to go. However, the officers kept asking questions regarding the presence of contraband. The defendant stated that there was nothing inside the car, and the officer instructed the defendant to get out of the car and perform a pat-down search. There, the Virginia Supreme Court held that in such a situation, when faced by two uniformed and armed police officers, one of whom persist in asking questions regarding criminal activity, a reasonable person would not feel free to leave, even when an officer had previously informed him that he was free to leave. A reasonable person would conclude his detention continued, and that a reasonable inference to draw from the defendant's voluntary exiting of his vehicle is that he concluded that he was not free to leave. Moreover, in Harris, the officer stopped the defendant for a broken taillight. A second officer arrived on scene. Both the original officer and the backup officer had their emergency action lights on. The officer did not charge the defendant with a traffic offense, but instead started to ask if there was anything in his truck. The defendant eventually consented to the search of his truck, where the officers found several stolen items. In suppressing the contraband, the Virginia Supreme Court held that the traffic stop was concluded when the officer returned the Social Security card, very much like what we have here. The initial justification for the stop had concluded when Officer Valentin handed back Mr. Yen his driver's license and registration back at his cruiser. However, the court explained that while the failure to affirmatively inform the defendant that he was free to leave does not by itself require a finding that the ensuing encounter was not consensual, the officer, and this is very important, I can't emphasize this enough, the officer did nothing to indicate to Harris that he was no longer subject to the detention for a traffic violation. Thus, the Supreme Court has held that a officer must do more than just simply proceed with a line of questioning. He needs to do something to indicate to a layperson that he is no longer subject to the initial detention and that the officer wishes to proceed simply on a consensual encounter.
Mr. Dubler, there's no issue here that the initial seizure and its continuation through the DUI portion of this is proper. Your argument it was below and is now that the extension of it once the DUI portion was over is what makes the eventual consent invalid, correct?
Yes, it was at the time that the field sobriety test ended. At that point, Officer Valentin needed to be more clear in his interactions with Mr. Yen so that a reasonable person in his position would understand that the detention was over. I would concede that after...
Judge Alston, what would you say would be necessary to make it more clear? And then I'm going to talk about some of the historical facts, I think, that no one has in dispute in this case, and that the officer indicated that the DUI investigation was over and given him his license back. What more would you suggest the law requires?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree slightly with what Officer Valentin told Mr. Yen. He told Mr. Yen that the DUI evaluation was over. To lawyers, we would understand that to mean that the field sobriety test had ended and he's not going to be offering a PBT and that you're free to go. But most people who have no interactions with police or have very limited interactions with police, the evaluation, the test, he just performed some field sobriety tests. A test is an evaluation. Okay, sir, the tests for the DUI are over. He did not inform Mr. Yen that, no, I'm not going to be charging you with any DUI-related offense. All Mr. Yen knew is that the field sobriety test portion of the investigation was over. He didn't know anything more than that. I would suggest, if I may suggest, that Officer Valentin could have done several things. He could have used the magic words, you're free to go, though he need not do that, and multiple courts have held otherwise, or held the same way. But he could have simply stated, Mr. Yen, we're not going to be charging you with the DUI offense tonight, but I have several other questions for you.
Mr. Dubler, Valentin also testified that he informed Yen that he did not believe he was intoxicated and that, quote, the evaluation for DUI was over. If he told Mr. Yen that, which is how the transcript reads, how is that not what you just said he needed to tell him?
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's not the way I read the transcript, and when I was at the preliminary hearing, that's not what I understood the answer to be. As I stated in my brief, the last portion, I did not believe that he was intoxicated, seemed to be more of a commentary to the court and to counsel Robert Whitestone's question, because Mr. Whitestone followed up, the question was, all right, but did you tell him with the words I used, you're free to leave, you can go? Not to my memory. At the time he had his license, oh, I'm sorry, Your Honors, I'm on page 27 going on to page 28 of the joint appendix. Not to my memory, at the time he had his license, he was issued a warning ticket for the initial infraction. And I told him verbally that the evaluation for DUI was over. I concluded that to mean that's what he told Mr. Yen, the evaluation for DUI was over, and that he subjectively believed that he was not intoxicated. However, that was never communicated to Mr. Yen. Here, in the case of Barr, Officer Valentin, like the officers in Riverton...
Let's stick with just that quote. I told him that the evaluation for DUI was over. Why isn't that enough?
Yes, Your Honor. Similar to what I was saying to Judge Alston, a reasonable person, and that is a layperson, not a lawyer, not somebody who's engaged in the criminal justice system every day, would think that an evaluation is a test. His field sobriety test had just ended. A reasonable person, I would submit, would conclude that, okay, the officer just told me I don't have any more tests for you. That's not the same as you're free to go. I'm not charging you with an offense tonight. Please proceed to walk back over a car length away with emergency action lights still flashing and just proceed on your way. You may ignore everything I say further. I would respectfully submit to the court that a reasonable person in that exact situation would not feel free to leave, that person would not know that the DUI investigation was over. All they knew was that the field sobriety portion of the investigation was over.
I asked Mr. Uberman how he distinguished Harris, so I'm going to now ask you the reverse of that question. How do you distinguish Dickerson?
Yes, Your Honor. So in Dickerson, what I think is quite important there is, yes, so in Dickerson, the police did inform him that he was free to leave, at which point the deputy asked if there was anything he should know about. But at that point, the defendant knew he was free to leave. The officer specifically used those magic words. I think that's the ultimate signal to a criminal defendant. Yes, you're free to leave. But then the defendant started volunteering extra information. Yes, he does smoke marijuana. There's some roaches in the ashtray. Volunteering all of this extra information signals that I feel free to leave. I'm going to talk about things unrelated to what you've just asked me. I'm not talking about things in my car. I'm talking about, yeah, I smoke marijuana. There might be some roaches in the ashtray. But the distinction here is that person was informed that he was free to leave. The officer elected that avenue to signal to his respective citizen, yes, you are free to leave, which is vastly different than the Harris case.
Viewed in the light most favorable to you under the stipulated facts, what is the best fact you have for he's not free to leave, other than that it's officers asking him questions?
The best fact, Your Honor, it's a hard question to answer because I think there's two equally as important facts, if I may.
You can have a 1A.
Okay, so we'll do a 1A first. 1A is that Mr. Yen was taken about a car length away from his personal vehicle. He couldn't just simply walk away. He would have to walk away about a car length away, get back into his car, and leave. He didn't have an immediate point or immediate way of leaving the scene. He was in the presence of two armed police officers a car length away from his vehicle. I would say my sub-point would be that the officers, the backup officer, his emergency action lights were on. That tells any reasonable person, anybody, at least within this country, when you see those lights flare up, you know that you need to pull over and that you need to comply with an officer's request. You are not free to leave. If you see an officer pull up behind you with his lights on, you know you need to stop. Those lights were never deactivated on the backup officer's car. So if you take that, if you take these two facts in conjunction, the fact that he is back at Officer Valentin's cruiser in the presence of Officer Valentin and his backup officer, and the emergency action the emergency action equipment are still activated, I would submit to the court that any reasonable person presented into that fact situation would feel that, nope, I need to stay put. They're not done with me yet.
Well, this is Judge Huff, and that would, of course, would be in addition to the officer's statement, I've concluded my tests, as opposed to saying, I'm not going to charge you with DUI.
Correct. My evaluation into a DUI is over, meaning the field sobriety portion of this test is over. Not saying, listen, sir, I'm not going to charge you tonight, I don't believe you're intoxicated. I think if you look at the record in the light most favorable to the appellee, that's what's borne out here, using those reasonable inferences. Respectfully, Your Honor, yes. And in conjunction with the fact that right after he says the DUI, he meaning Officer Valentine, right after Officer Valentine says the evaluation into a DUI is over, please raise your shirt, that comes right after the DUI investigation. There is no break. There is nothing that could indicate to a person that there's been a lull or cooling off period or anything akin to, okay, we're shifting, we're transitioning into something else. We're transitioning into just a conversation between an officer and a citizen. His request to search his car and the instruction to raise his shirt came immediately after the DUI investigation. Any reasonable person would believe that those two, the question and the instruction, were related to the DUI investigation.
Did one of your honors have a question? Well, this is Judge Huff. I just wanted to point out, you're in your last minute, so if you can bring it to a summary, I'd quite appreciate it. Thank you.
And yes, I'll let you summarize, but I do have one last question, but I can go over time, so go ahead.
Yes, Your Honors. As I stated in my brief, even if the trial court was wrong in holding that Officer Valentin needed to do something affirmatively to show the defendant, Mr. Yen, that he was free to leave, though I think the Harris court does specifically hold that, under the familiar doctrine, the right result for the wrong reason, this court can, as long as the record supports the facts underlying the right decision, this court can basically insert the right reason. And I think the facts of this case are completely borne out in the record. So finally, given the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, I think if you look at a stop that's lasting, and I think this is also a very, very important factor, the length of time that Mr. Yen was subject to a detention, conservatively 15 minutes, this is all based off of the officer's estimate, between 15 and 25 minutes in the presence of two armed police officers, and as multiple Virginia cases have held, that an officer need not have their hand on their pistol, just the display of a badge of authority and an armed police officer with activated emergency action lights, more than a car's length away, having questions coming immediately after the investigation to a DUI, no reasonable person would have felt free just to simply turn away from Officer Valentin in the presence, again, of these two officers with emergency action lights, and get back into his car and proceed on his way. And for these reasons, Your Honor, I would submit that this court should uphold the lower court's decision. Thank you very much.
All right. My one overtime question is, you agree with the statement in Harris that the key issue here, whether he is seized or not, is one we review de novo?
Correct, Your Honor. It is a mixed question of law and fact. However, I would just supplement that with the standard of review in this case, given that the, and it's rare, but that the appellee in this case is the defendant, that we need to take all, using the de novo standard of review, look at the facts and give Mr. Yen any reasonable deductions that we can glean from those facts in his favor.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Huberman?
Thank you, Your Honor. There is one thing I would like to clarify in the record, and this is on appendix page 27. Defense, this is on cross-examination of Officer Valentin, and defense counsel expressly asks the officer, before you asked him if he would consent to the search of the vehicle, did you tell him he was free to leave? The officer responds, forgive me, yes, and he says, I didn't tell him that in that words, but says, quote, I told Mr. Yen that I had concluded my tests, we weren't going to have him attempt any more, and I did not believe he was intoxicated. He communicated to Mr. Yen that he did not believe he was intoxicated. Further, to shift gears a little bit, there was no evidence before the trial court which suggested that the initial detention was of an undue duration or that it was a duration longer than that was necessary to effectuate the dual purpose of investigating both the traffic infraction and Yen's possible intoxication. Under the totality of the circumstances, a reasonable person simply would not have felt compelled in this instance. Again, those factors include the officer's conduct, whether any police misconduct occurred, the number of officers present, duration of the encounter, the characteristics of the individual who is searched, and the police behavior itself includes threatening presence of several officers, displaying a weapon, physical touching, using language or a tone of voice that indicates that compliance has to be compelled and that refusal is simply not allowed.
Counsel, I'm going to go back to a point your opponent colleague made, and it sort of made something come to me as I was going through this. And obviously, we as lawyers have a better or more of a benefit in those cases, I would hope, to understand the significance of statements and the significance of positions that you can take legally and the like. But if you are a person who has no legal training and you're having an encounter with a police officer, and I'm not going to really define the nature of the encounter, but you're having an encounter with a police officer, and most of us, when we're having encounters with police officers, are basically told to cooperate. And if you are a reasonable person and you're unsure as to whether or not this encounter has completed or ended or not, don't you put yourself in a real kind of Hobson's choice of saying, okay, if I walk away here, am I obstructing justice, or what should I do here because I'm a little confused? Is there a burden on the defendant to, in essence, say, okay, what is the status of what we're doing here, or is it, once again, the reasonable person with reasonable education and not the standard of what us lawyers would do?
Res- respectfully, Your Honor, I think that's why the totality of the circumstances test exists, is simply to answer that question, because the courts recognize that most citizens that are having encounters with police officers are not going to be lawyers or familiar with the law. And I think in Delgado, a very pertinent quote to answer your question, Your Honor, is that while most people will respond to a police request, the fact that most people do so, and do so without being told that they are free not to respond, hardly eliminates the consensual nature of the response. And I think that essentially perfectly sums up the Commonwealth's position in this case. And I see by the timer on my end, it looks like my time has run up. And if that's on the court's end as well, I'd simply respectfully ask that this court reverse the trial court's ruling on the defendant's motion to suppress, and thank the court for its time and for permitting us to do this by teleconference.
Very well. Thank you very much to both of you. We appreciate the arguments. The case is submitted. You'll be hearing from us shortly. And with that, the court stands adjourned, and the judges will go into conference.